Touch is a contentious issue in the yoga world. Touch can be connecting and healing, but it can also be violating and inappropriate. It's important that we are conscious and mindful about the use of touch. Let's start by talking about inappropriate touch. In my 20s, I was in Mysore, now called Mysuru, in India studying Ashtanga yoga, and I dropped into a class with a male teacher that I didn't know. While I was in Urdhva Dhanurasana, the wheel pose on the left at the end of the Ashtanga primary series, without saying a word, the teacher crawled underneath me, he put his head through my thighs, and he stood up. He had hold of my ankles, my legs were over his shoulders, and I was hanging down his back with my head somewhere around the back of his thighs while he was swinging me back and forth across the back of his body, presumably to loosen up my spine. It was crazy. These photos are with a different teacher in India around the same time. You can see that he gave me some pretty intense adjustments, and while I wouldn't really go in for this now, he was always very respectful and appropriate with his touch with me, unlike the other teacher who adjusted me in Urdhva Dhanurasana. Let me break down for you now what felt inappropriate with this Urdhva Dhanurasana adjustment. He touched me without my consent. He didn't even ask if I wanted an adjustment. He just moved in and did it. Not only did he touch my body without my consent, he also moved it into a completely different position without asking. He put his head between my legs. I don't think I really need to say anything more about that. He had hold of my ankles and was hanging me upside down in a position that meant that I was completely physically dependent on him. I didn't know him. It was my very first class in the Shala with him as a teacher. And we hadn't established any rapport or trust that would indicate that this might be a welcome adjustment. He was male. If a female teacher did the same, it would still not feel okay, but for me, the sexual dynamic would have been different. It was a physically demanding adjustment that could have easily caused physical injury. As someone who has never experienced sexual trauma myself, I still hold the vicarious trauma of the millions of women in the world who have been sexually abused by men in positions of power, and the adjustment triggered fear in me. I've heard many stories like this from yoga students practicing in all parts of the world, and unfortunately, it's not an isolated incident. When I surveyed yoga students and asked them what their yoga teachers had not done well to support their mental health in their yoga classes, touching without permission was mentioned time and time again. One student said, "Some teachers start to physically adjust without asking your permission to do so or even giving you notice. They just pop up behind you and put their hands on your hips. That is an absolute no-go for me." In their book, Overcoming Trauma Through Yoga, Emerson and Hopper suggest that in a trauma-sensitive yoga class, teachers predominantly offer visual and verbal assist to students and rarely offer physical assists, as touching a student is a serious decision that bears thoughtful deliberation. I agree with this, and I believe that it's important for a mental health-aware yoga class too. While Emerson and Hopper don't rule out the use of touch altogether, their concerns about physical touch are that, one, the student will experience touch by their teacher as a traumatic reminder of the previous trauma, resulting in overwhelming emotions, intrusive memories, or dissociative flashbacks. Or two, the yoga teacher will use touch as it's more expedient than encouraging the student to have their own internal experience. They write, "Many of us have experienced touch from a yoga teacher one time or another as coming from the teacher's need for the class to go a certain way and for the postures to be performed in the way that the teacher saw fit. In a trauma-sensitive context, this is really dangerous. While safety is always a priority for our program, we also want to help trauma survivors reclaim their bodies and their experiences as their own. Anything that takes away from the student's empowerment within the class is at best unhelpful and at worst destructive." Let me read that last bit again, as this is really key for mental health aware yoga too. Anything that takes away from the student's empowerment within the class is at best unhelpful and at worst destructive. In an anonymous letter posted on the Yoga Buzz blog titled "Please Don't Touch Me, Trauma and Consent on the Yoga Mat," a yoga student shared her experience of touch and trauma in the yoga shala. I'm going to read you the full letter here as it conveys the challenges of touch in the words of a student really beautifully. This is what she writes. "I'm writing to all the yoga teachers out there about hands-on touching for adjustments. I don't know how to put into words the amount of trauma I've had in my life, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, and all that I have witnessed and was part of during my time in Iraq. I can't write it all out in depth without traumatizing you, so I'll write you a letter as to why I'm not appreciative of being touched, not only so my space is honored, but so all people's spaces are honored. May we all be respected, honored, and loved just as we are, imperfectly perfect. Dear yoga teacher, first I want to say, wow, I'm in an actual yoga studio. Do you know how long it has taken me to work on myself and my fears just to step into the space with you? Well, it has taken me years and I'm still a little nervous. I'm a little nervous about my yoga outfit and feeling a bit awkward in it. I know how to do the basic yoga poses, but I'm scared that you're going to go fast or single me out verbally if I don't do a pose right. And I am terrified that you're going to try to correct my pose by touching me. I know it's your job to keep us yogis safe, and it must be hard to see me struggle in a pose. But you know, I want to experience the pose myself and be allowed time to work with my body to come into full bloom in the pose. I want that for myself. And I want to know what it feels like to open up. I may not even open up in a pose until a few classes in, but I want that experience. Not only do I want the experience, I want my boundaries to be respected, and I want to feel safe in a yoga class. You see, the first memory I have as a child has been sexually abused by a family member. I was also beaten by this family member. I was sexually abused and raped and neglected and beaten until I was 17. I ran away from home at the age of 17 into the arms of a man I barely knew, but it was much better than my parents' home. Well, he beat me too. I fled from him and began a career in the military, where I was physically assaulted, sexually assaulted, and survived a deployment to Iraq where our base was mortared almost on a daily basis. Heavy stuff, right? Well, imagine the world through my eyes and through the eyes of survivors and veterans out there. Just walking into a yoga studio has taken every effort of courage and mindful breathing I have learned. So you're probably wondering, why even attend a yoga class, right? I can only hope my bravery will uplift other survivors and veterans to experience yoga as a form of self-care, healing, and community interaction. There are so many people who are confined to their homes because of fear of being singled out verbally in a yoga class or touched that they stay homebound. This was me for many years. I was homebound and I had an amazing home yoga practice, but I was longing for communion with others. I was lonely. I was yearning for community and connection. When I did venture out to my first yoga class, it was with my massage therapist, who is also my friend now. She encouraged me to go to a studio, so I went. I loved it so much. I went back again and again. I became so self-confident with yoga that I practiced out of state when I went on vacation. I then wanted to see what other yoga studios were like, and that is when I learned that not all yoga studios are the same. My first visit to one studio, I was touched several times during a floor pose. The yoga teacher touched me from my backside and my brain triggered. I started the mindful breathing. My heart raced. I kept telling myself I'm safe, I'm good, but I was triggered, and I have no idea how I finished the class. I didn't go back to any yoga studios for a while. And then after some time passed, I went back to the yoga studio where I started. The yoga teacher and I were comfortable with each other and she began to correct me with touch. I didn't mind sometimes because I'd gotten to know her, but on other days it was a real trigger. I didn't know how to tell her that it ruined my yoga practice when she made adjustments. I never did tell her, too ashamed of not being like everyone else in the class welcoming adjustments. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like I was too damaged to be like the other yogis and just too embarrassed to let her know that I didn't want to be corrected. So I cultivated a strong home practice, but then that yearning for community would come up for me. So I would bravely venture out to practice yoga in various yoga studios. I was surprised how some places would respect my personal space and others would not. Being in downward dog and having my hips pulled into a deeper position almost made me fall to my knees in horror that I was being touched this way. It seemed so offensive to my body and that I had no boundaries. It left me feeling powerless. I just wanted to go to class to move my body, flow with spirit, and free my mind, not to be re-traumatized. I just want my body to be free to be just how it is in any pose. I want my body to have the freedom to open up when I'm mentally and emotionally ready, not for my body to be adjusted and demanded into a pose. I just want to be imperfectly perfect as I am in this moment. Whether or not I have the perfect downward dog or side angle pose, it will get there. Let my body savor the opening, not forced into the opening. I would like to feel empowered and feel as though I have a choice when I practice at yoga studios. I would like to see yes, no cards at yoga studios that allow me the choice to be touched for adjustments. I like this idea best of all I have researched. It's so easy and quick and can be kept with the yoga supplies for class. These cards are great not only for trauma survivors and veterans, but also for those who are sensitive to touch for their own personal reasons. So, yoga teacher, you see why I would rather you not touch. I really do like you and admire your wisdom and the way you make yoga look so graceful and beautiful. I want to get there, and I will in my own time. I want to experience the unfolding of it all in my way. I look up to you and want to continue this journey in yoga with you. Now that we've gotten the touch thing out of the way, let's flow. See you on the mat. Wow, that's powerful, isn't it? I really hope this article gets you thinking about touching in your yoga classes. Let's talk about alternatives to touch now. Instead of going straight to physical assists and touching your students, consider predominantly offering visual and verbal cues to your students. Let's look at visual assists. Visual assisting is where the teacher demonstrates a posture or practice themselves. Here's a photo of a couple of my friends, Xian Qi and Jeanette Derbyshire from Seeker and Kind Yoga in Mullumbimby in Australia, demonstrating what a visual assist might look like. The teacher, Jeanette on the right, is showing Xian on the left the position and action of the posture using her own body to demonstrate. Visual assists can be an effective way to communicate with students. However, it does need to be done mindfully. I went to a class a little while ago. It was an open class where the teacher, dressed in tight-fitting leggings and a little sports bra, spent a considerable amount of time demonstrating jumping forward from downward dog to Uttanasana, standing forward bend, via a handstand, which she held for some time before gracefully bringing her feet down on the floor between her hands in a forward bend. Graceful? Yes. Impressive? Yes. Helpful? Not really. Intimidating? Very. When demonstrating a pose, consider your intention. Are you showing your students your physical prowess and your muscular body? Or are you teaching them a pose to guide them to explore their physical internal experience? The way you teach will reflect this intention. Try showing your students different variations of the pose or practice without making one appear better than the other. The best way to do a pose or practice is the way that is best for the individual student in that moment. The most difficult variation of the pose is not the best or the right version. It's simply one of the many variations. When you demonstrate the most difficult version, as the teacher in the example I just gave did, and then say later, "But if you can't do this, you can do the easier version," and then demonstrate the less easier version, you're communicating that one version is better than the other. and this may result in the student feeling not good enough or ignite a competitive streak in your students to push themselves in a way that really isn't in their best interest and doesn't foster embodiment and self-compassion. With the previous example of demonstrating the transition from downward dog to uttanasana, you could say, there are a few different ways we could transition between these poses. And then you could demonstrate perhaps taking four steps, like small steps forward to bring your feet towards the front of the mat, or you could demonstrate taking big steps forward. You could demonstrate jumping both feet between the hands, or if it was a particularly gymnastic class, you could come into handstand before bringing both feet down between the hands. The emphasis is on showing different variations, not levels of skill or achievement. I sometimes say to my students, I'm not interested in a pose that could go on the front of Yoga Journal magazine. I'm interested in you finding a pose that feels good in your body in this moment. Or perhaps they'll say, there are no advanced or beginner versions of this pose. There's only the version that feels good in your body today. In my online survey of yoga students, I asked them what great things their yoga teachers had done to support their mental health in their yoga classes that they had attended. Here's what two students said that relates to what we've been talking about in this section. They encourage students to work at their own pace and let students know it's normal to have variations in abilities to do a pose. And creating a calm, supportive environment is the most important for me. I can become nervous when meeting new people or compare myself to others. So it's great when the teacher makes sure there is no space for this competition and instead focuses on methods that help bring a sense of calm. Before offering a hands-on or physical assist to a student, try offering a verbal assist instead. Some experienced teachers I've spoken to, especially those who are sensitive to students who have experienced trauma, feel that they can communicate everything they need to with their students using words, and they don't need touch at all. There is a definite art to the way we can use words to communicate clearly and compassionately with our students. It takes practice, but it's a skill worth honing. If worded skillfully, verbal assist can clearly communicate your respect of the student's personal boundaries and your care and your interest in them. Some students may never have experienced this respect and care, and it can be profound for the student and helpful in cultivating a secure and healthy relationship between the student and the teacher. Following on from the example in the visual assist section, if you were to use a verbal assist to offer options for transitioning between downward dog and uttanasana, the standing forward bend, you could say, so there are a few different ways that we could transition between downward dog and forward bend. We could take small steps forward to bring our feet towards our hands. We could take big steps forward, or we could bend our knees and with the in-breath jump both feet between the hands. And you might even go further and say something like, do the variation that feels best in your body in this moment. There's no right or wrong way of doing any of it. Just because one version seems more difficult than the other, it doesn't mean that it's the best version. Choose the version that suits your intention for your practice today and what you're needing in this moment. Be mindful when offering verbal assist that you're offering invitations or suggestions, not demands. Be sure to use invitational language and to encourage the students to check in with their own internal needs and to take action based on that. Choose language that is not only invitational, but is also inclusive, non-judgmental, accurate, fosters connection, and encourages curiosity. We're going to be going more deeply into languaging soon. So does this mean that we should never touch our students? No, not necessarily. What it does mean is that we need to respect our students' boundaries and be conscious in our decision whether or not to use touch in our yoga classes. We need to ask ourselves if touch could be triggering for the student, and if it's taking the student towards or away from their internal experience. If you're considering touch, Ask yourself if there's another way to offer assistance that could better support your student to feel safe or to feel relaxed. You could try a verbal or a visual assist instead. An easy and important rule of thumb is to not touch your students that you don't know well. It takes time to establish trust and get to know a student enough to assess if touch might be appropriate and helpful. Wait until you've developed a relationship with the student before touching them. If you believe touch to be the most appropriate way to support your student, always ask. Consent is paramount. Never give your student a hands-on assist without first asking them, even if you've touched them many times before. If you're offering touch in your class, let students know in the beginning so they know what to expect. You might say something like, I may offer touch or hands-on assists in the class to students who would like them. If you're new to the class today, I won't be offering any hands-on assists until we get to know each other better. For those of you who have been practicing with me for a while, I will always ask if you would like a hands-on assist, and please let me know if it would be helpful for you or not. I'm totally fine with you saying no if you prefer not to be touched. I encourage you to tune into and really honor your body and what it needs in each moment. When offering touch, especially when touch is new, stand where the student can clearly see you, make eye contact, and clearly explain the touch that you're offering. So you might say, your knee looks unstable in that position. Would you be comfortable with me placing my hand on your knee and gently guiding it to a more stable position over your ankle? In this example, I would always offer a verbal or a visual assist first, but if the student was having difficulty understanding my instruction, an offering of a hands-on assist like this might be appropriate. If offering touch to a student that you've been teaching for a long time and from experience you know appreciates and benefits from touch, over time you may shorten this to simply say, may I, as you approach the student with your body language indicating the invitation for touch. Just because a student consented to touch in the past, it doesn't mean that they consent all the time. Always ask. Even when asked, students may consent to touch even though they don't really want it. So it's really important to always communicate with your words and your body language that it's okay to say no. Students will be noticing your interaction with other students in the class. So for students to feel safe to say no, they need to see you genuinely communicating and honoring choice with all your students in the class. This is really important. The discrepancy between the student's communicated consent and their actual needs often happens because of the power imbalance between teacher and student. The student may feel embarrassed to say no or feel like there'll be consequences if they refuse. They might believe that the teacher knows their body and what they need better than them, and the teacher can reinforce this belief and in doing so disempower the student if they're not mindful in the way that they offer touch. The student may have had the experience in previous classes or in other experiences where their choices around touch were not honoured and feel powerless to assert their choice. The student may want to conform or to be a good student and as a result consent to touch even though they don't actually want it or feel comfortable with it. So it's important not only to get consent for touch, but to clearly and openly communicate with your words and with your body language that saying no is a perfectly valuable response. Okay, let's talk about consent tokens now. Consent tokens are a simple and effective way to communicate consent about touch in your yoga class. If you're using hands-on assist in your yoga classes, I highly recommend that you use these. Place a token on each student's mat at the beginning of class with the no side facing up. And invite your student to change it to yes if they would like a hands-on assist. So by placing the consent token on the mat with the no facing up, your students have to actively choose to say yes rather than it just being the default. This means that they're more likely to choose yes when they mean yes rather than consent because they feel pressured or embarrassed to say no. In addition, it's important to give a token to each student rather than just leaving them at the front of the room for the students to take or not to take. This means that nobody's singled out. If you're teaching in a studio, I suggest introducing tokens to all the classes so students come to expect them and feel safe in all the classes. Let your students know that by indicating consent, one, they will be offered hands-on assists. Two, they can still say no if they're offered. Three, they're welcome to change their preference throughout the class. And four, just because they indicated consent in the last class, it doesn't mean they have to consent again in this class. Even when a student indicates with their consent token that they're open to hands-on assists, always ask before touching them anyway. While they may generally be open to touch, they may not wish to be touched in a particular pose or in a particular way. Always ask. Okay, choice and empowerment. When we experience trauma, what often makes it traumatic is feeling powerless to change our circumstance. Likewise, when we're feeling depressed or anxious, we can feel powerless and hopeless about our circumstances. Giving our students choice and deeply honoring the choices they make can be a very healing experience for our students. When we don't offer and honor choice, we can reinforce the experience of powerlessness and hopelessness for our students. If hands-on assists are an important part of your style of yoga, like Ashtanga Mysore style, it's still important that you ask for consent each time you touch. In addition, I also suggest mentioning in the written class description and the beginning of class that hands-on assists are offered throughout the class, but are not compulsory. Okay, so now we've spoken about inappropriate touch, about alternatives to touch like verbal and visual assists, as well as the use of consent tokens. Let's take a look now at appropriate touch. If you decide that touch is the best way to support your students in a particular moment, be mindful of how and where you touch them and ensure that the touch is for their benefit only, not for yours. I wish this didn't bear mentioning, but unfortunately it does, so here goes. Do not touch your students' genitals, bottom, or breasts. Do not touch your genitals, bottom, or breasts against your student's body or in front of their face. Here's a couple of examples with my friends demonstrating. And for the record, they're both yoga teachers and they're close friends. And when I asked to photograph them demonstrating appropriate hands-on assists, they'd asked me if I'd like some shots of inappropriate hands-on adjustments. I didn't ask them to do it. I wouldn't ask anybody to do that. But I do hope that they're helpful. Okay, so a hands-on assist like the one on the left might be appropriate in downward dog, depending on the situation and the student's needs. But the hands-on assists, like the one on the right, would not be appropriate. Look at the way Jeanette is lying her groin and chest over Xian and has her hands on her backside. While Jeanette doesn't look particularly comfortable in this assist, this is not an over-exaggeration. I've been adjusted like this many times before. And in these shots, we can see that a verbal or visual assist for Baddha Konasana, like in this photograph on the left, might be appropriate depending on the situation and the student's needs, but the hands-on assist like the one on the right would not be. Notice how the teacher's genitals and chest are pressing along the student's body. It's just not necessary. So if you're going to touch your students, be sure to keep the touch as minimal as possible and don't linger. Keep your sexual energy in check. Don't bring it into the yoga room and don't bring it into a hands-on assist. If a student tells you that they don't want a hands-on assist, if they change their mind halfway through a hands-on assist, or anything at all in their body language suggests that they're not comfortable with it, don't touch your student. I really wish I didn't have to say this, but given the repeated allegations of this happening in yoga circles, it does bear mentioning. Just don't do it. In her book, Teaching Yoga, a really wonderful book, by the way, Donna Fahey shared her journey with touch and consent. And I think this is really important for us all to hear so we don't go into judgment or shame when we learn a new way of teaching. I love that Donna is really transparent and self-compassionate about her journey. In the early days, Donna said that she never asked her students permission to touch at all. And then later, she would only ask if a touch involved an intimate part of the body. And now, she always asks permission before touching. Donna found that the benefits of always asking permission included the creation of a pause where both student and teacher consider whether they wish to be touched, whether they wish to touch or be touched. The rallying of the teachers and the students' full awareness to the process, which helped the student be more receptive to the information and the teacher be more sensitive and less habitual in their adjustments. The acknowledgement that simply being present in the class does not automatically constitute permission to touch. The recognition that the student has a role in communicating their personal boundaries. The acceptance that there are times when a student will not want to be touched. Hopefully that's some food for thought. Let's talk about hugging now. Hugging students before and after class can also be inappropriate. Some students don't appreciate being hugged, and when teachers only hug their favorite students, it can leave the other students feeling left out, even if they didn't actually want a hug. But it's not that black and white. I live in Mullumbimby in Australia, where hugging is the norm, and it would feel rude to me to refuse a hug. My personal rule of thumb is that I never offer or instigate a hug. However, if a student asks me for a hug, if I feel comfortable with the offering, I will consent and hug back. When this happens, I'm always attuned to what feels right for me and what is appropriate for the students in terms of the length of a hug and the way that our bodies meet. And finally, for this section on touch, let's look at partner work. Partner work can be a great way to facilitate connection between people, but it can also be very confronting for many people, whether it includes touch or not. If you do offer partner work, always offer an alternative in a way that is accepting of any choice. For example, you might say, you might like to turn to the person next to you and try X, Y, or Z. Or you can try this by yourself by doing this and then demonstrating a different variation. If there is any touch involved, make sure that it is always with clear consent and always appropriate between individuals who may not know each other, like we talked about in the appropriate touch section. For example, with consent, the partner work on the left might be appropriate depending on the class. However, the partner work on the right is likely to be inappropriate, and I wouldn't suggest offering something like this at all in your classes. And this is a stock image, by the way, that I found online when I searched for the word yoga. So that's it for the touch section of creating a safe container. My suggestion when you're considering assisting your students is to offer visual and verbal assists as much as possible in your class. And if you do decide to use hands-on assists, always give considered thought to your intention behind the hands-on assist. Touch in a minimal and sparing way. Only use hands-on assist to gently guide your students, never to push or to move their body in a way that they couldn't do by themselves. Use consent tokens to create a culture of choice and consent, and always, always ask. Thank you for coming on this journey with me and being part of the change in creating a safe and respectful space for yoga students. It's no small thing. I'll see you over in the next video.